Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the March 1994 edition of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. I'm being joined by this month, Colin Jenkins. Colin, how are you?
Hello, yeah, I'm alright.
Craig Wilson isn't with us today, unfortunately, he'll be back next month, so nothing major. But we are here to review mainly WrestleMania 10, and we are recording this in sort of the third week of the month, so anything that happens between now and the end of March will appear in next month's show. We'll start with the news, and WrestleMania was, well, the show was stolen by Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon with an incredible ladder match for the Intercontinental title, which Dave Meltzer rated as 5 stars. The match focused around stuntman-like bumps from Shawn Michaels. Razor won, becoming the undisputed champion. It is also expected that Michaels will take a several-month-long sabbatical starting very soon.
Bret Hart and his brother Owen put on a highly entertaining match to open WrestleMania, which Owen Hart unexpectedly won clean. The match focused very much on a scientific style, with Bret re-injuring his knee, which you could link back to when Owen kicked his leg out of his leg at Royal Rumble. The ending saw Bret attempt a victory roll, but Owen Hart blocked it as the roll through and got a pin of his own and stunned Madison Square Garden.
Wasn't all a bad evening for Bret as he left the WrestleMania 10 as a WWF champion, and I think it's testimony to the strength of the Bret and Owen match and the ladder match that I'm addressing this third. Bret defeated Yokozuna in the main event. Luger faced Yokozuna in the first match, but was disqualified by special guest referee Mr. Perfect, which meant Yokozuna progressed to the main event, which was refereed by Rowdy Roddy Piper. Bret won the title after Yokozuna slipped off the top rope, attempting a bonsai drop, the story being that Yokozuna landed on his head, enabling Bret to pick up the win. The show closed with Bret celebrating, surrounded by babyfaces, including Lex Luger, who came out and shook his hand. Bret's brother Owen was watching from the aisleway.
WrestleMania also saw some title retentions for the Quebecers, who lost to Men on a Mission by count out, but retained the tag titles. Alundra Blaze retained the Women's Championship when she beat Leilani Kai. Randy Savage defeated Crush in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Earthquake defeated Adam Bomb in a very quick squash match. Quick, but not the quickest in WrestleMania history. And Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon defeated Doink and Dink in a, I suppose you call it, a mixed tag match.
That's what they were addressing it as, so we will do that. On to WCW news. Ric Flair is, well, turning heel, essentially with the view that he's going to set up a program with Hulk Hogan. Hogan still hasn't signed with the company, but when you watch WCW television this month, they are treating it like he has, or that he will do, given that he's being brought up every 10 minutes. And he isn't at least due to join the company for a few months, although again, emphasis on the fact he hasn't signed. The Flair heel turn began on WCW TV with, in a main event between Ricky Steamboat and Steve Austin. Steamboat won the match by DQ after Austin's manager, Colonel Robert Parker, interfered. Flair came out to try and help Steamboat, but in the melee, Steamboat hit Flair by accident. Flair will face off against Steamboat at Spring Stampede next month.
Over in Germany this month, quite a horrific injury for Cactus Jack, Mick Foley. His right ear was ripped from his head in a match against Vader. Cactus Jack hung himself between the second and third ropes in a spot that he's done before, but the pressure of the cables was so tight that his right ear was torn completely off, and his left ear was also split quite badly. Cactus did continue the match for another couple of minutes and has returned home to the US, but doctors were only able to save part of his right ear.
And we will move on to our review of WrestleMania 10. Colin, if you would like to kick us off by running down the card.
Okay, in the opener, Owen Hart defeated Bret Hart clean in a singles match. Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon defeated Doink and Dink the Clown in a mixed tag team match. Macho Man Randy Savage defeated Crush, who was accompanied by Mr. Fuji, in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Alundra Blaze defeated Leilani Kai to retain her WWF Women's Championship. Men on a Mission defeated the Quebecers by count-out, but the Quebecers, of course, retained the tag titles. Yokozuna defeated Lex Luger by disqualification when he was disqualified by Mr. Perfect. Earthquake defeated Adam Bomb in a very quick squash match. Razor Ramon defeated Shawn Michaels in a fantastic Intercontinental Championship ladder match to become the undisputed IC champ. And Bret Hart closed the show defeating Yokozuna for the WWF Championship.
Colin, we will address this show chronologically, but again, I think just to emphasise that, one, that Bret and Owen are quite unlucky that they had a match that probably could have been match of the night on any of the previous 9 WrestleManias we've seen. But by the end of the night, Shawn and Razor was an unbelievable match. And this was a WrestleMania show on the whole. The rest of the card was fine. I thought the WWF title match stuff was a little underwhelming, but this was a WrestleMania that was fine with 2 unbelievable matches.
I think that the ladder match was absolutely amazing. Shawn Michaels and Razor have really taken a match that I didn't know too much about, and they surpassed my expectations. I expected a regular kind of match where at some point somebody would hit a finisher, somebody would go grab a ladder and climb up and grab the belts. But the way they used the ladder was incredible. It was essentially a no-holds-barred match with a ladder instead of a steel chair being used. But some of the stuff they managed to do was so innovative. I would be very surprised if we don't see another ladder match at some point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll do this again. very much. Whether they can match it or not is another question. But, and yeah, I think in the sense that there has been a match between Shawn and, I think, Bret Hart a couple of years back, but I don't get the sense that that was a match that was necessarily watched by a ton of people or was necessarily referenced much into the build-up of this. But I think a lot of people would have been watching a ladder match for the first time. And again, I think you're right in the sense that they called it a ladder match and the rules are easy enough, and we'll come to the Falls Count Anywhere match where the rules weren't so easy. But I think a lot of people, as you said, kind of just thought it'll be, you know, a normal match, and then there'll be a couple of spots over with the ladder where they'll climb up it, one guy will fall off, the other guy will grab it, and that'll be it. But pretty much after the first couple of minutes, this turned into a match where the ladder was being used as a weapon, it was being used as a platform, it was being used as something to throw at your opponent, especially so use something to throw your opponent off. All number of spots, and with respect to Razor, who was perfect in his role, this match was all about what crazy stuff can Shawn Michaels do in 20 odd minutes using a ladder, either hit something with it, fall off it, fly off it, etc. And there were so many spots that would have been a WrestleMania moment worthy spot at any point, and there was about, I don't know, half a dozen of them.
Oh yeah. I mean, Razor Ramon still took a couple of bumps that I wouldn't have expected him to take, but Shawn Michaels bumped like a trooper. He was flying all over the place, and like you say, a couple of those spots will be known as WrestleMania moments, so I suspect. When he did the splash from the top of the ladder, we'll see that a bit quite a few times down the road.
That'll look great in slow-mo.
Oh, yeah. And then there was the Ric Flair spot
as well, where he kind of ran to the corner where, like, Razor was rested up against the ladder, which was rested up against the turnbuckle. Razor ducked out of the way, and Michaels did the thing where, like, that Flair does, where he flips over, like, well, Flair, the turnbuckle, flipped over the ladder and fell to the outside. That was really nice as well.
Brilliant. I can't say anything bad about the match, if I'm honest. I really, really thought it was fantastic.
Again, I mean, I'm just recalling other things that happened. There was the bit where they were both up the ladder and Razor kind of did the superplex. Well, Razor didn't go with him. He just kind of superplexed him off from a standing position. And then, I don't know whether this bit was planned, but, like, Razor kind of, like, fell over with the ladder, which kind of made it look even more spectacular.
One thing I was... The ladder got caught, bent up a little bit when he fell off, didn't it?
Well, I was thinking, did they have a second one there? Because if the ladder, if the ladder broke, what do you do? I mean, because it nearly did. It flexed at the time.
Yeah, it did.
And that would have been bad. That would have been real bad. but the match ended with Razor kind of, Michaels was climbing up the ladder to try and grab the belt. Razor lifted up the ladder and Michaels kind of fell off. He crotched himself on the top rope and then, okay, he had to kind of manufacture to get his leg kind of caught in the top and middle rope. And quite a bit like Cactus Jack's head this month. And then Michaels kind of like, it was weird because What I saw, and I haven't watched it back since we watched it yesterday, but the way I saw it was that Michaels kind of got himself clear right before Razor grabbed the belts, but didn't really attempt to climb up. So I don't know whether he kind of fell out.
He got his leg caught.
Yeah.
He eventually managed to get himself out, but as he got his leg out, he managed to get his arm tied up as well.
Ah, right. Very good. Very good.
So he was completely, he literally only just got free as Razor took probably his biggest bump of the night when he pulled the belts off of the top of the ring.
Yeah. I mean, just an unbelievable match. As I say, Dave Meltzer gave it 5 stars. It's been praised across the board. Rightly so. A fantastic match. And again, just showcasing. And Michaels was the highlight reel here. Michaels was the guy who was doing, you know, all the spectacular stuff. But for me, Razor came out with just as much credit in the sense that, one, he won the match, which for his character was great, and he went through a war and came out the other side victorious. But two, just showcases two of the brightest prospects they've got. And two guys, it's like, I can see them doing this again for the WWF title in not too long.
I can't argue with it.
No.
Not at all.
You can't pick fault. You can't.
No.
It's nothing you can say. It was spectacular. It was five stars.
I can't really think of a missed spot. I can't think of hesitation. There's no point in that match where I think back now that I think they should have done that better.
No. No. Again, yeah, just absolutely fantastic. And we will now ascend to the card chronologically, given that we covered that match. We come to the opener, which was Bret against Owen. Again, as I said a few minutes ago, on any other WrestleMania, this would have been 1 or 1.1. As it was a distant second in the sense that the Shawn Razor match was so good. But this was superb in its own right. And this was an only singles match between Bret and Owen. One thing my main takeaway from this, other than the fact it's a really good match to watch, was that we are going to talk in a bit about, you know, Owen going forward and whether Owen's mic work is strong enough to carry the position he may end up being in. I suspect not. But one thing I really was surprised about was that Owen's charisma in the match surprised me a lot, in the sense that he played a very convincing kind of heel and did really well with just being this real kind of chicken heel. With, you know, he slapped him in the face at one point and then kind of begged off in the corner while the referee kept them apart. I thought that was great. And I thought Owen, in the match at least, did a really good job of that.
I think, if it wasn't for the ladder match, easily would have been match of the night. It was scientific, fantastic exhibition wrestling, and Owen Hart surprised me as well. I'd seen some of his promos in the lead up to WrestleMania, and I was wondering if he could get across the fact that he is the heel, or if he's just the begrudged little brother that doesn't like that his big brother's getting all the fans to cheer for him. But come the match, he did brilliantly, exceeded my expectations, and the match itself was fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's really very difficult to disagree with anything you said, in the sense that on another night, again, on another WrestleMania, without question, it would have been match of the night. The action was spectacular in parts, in terms of just, again, we want to talk about a match like the one between Shawn and Razor, where you can pick very little wrong with it. Likewise with this, you can't really pick much wrong with this, in terms of they didn't seem to miss a spot. The action was very fluid where it needed to be. It was a very un-Owen-like match, in the sense that I think I was reading that they've been doing kind of Bret against Owen recently at house shows as a kind of prelude to this, presumably. And that Owen's offense was kind of a bit too fan-friendly. And it seemed to me that they just stripped a lot of that back, because Owen barely left the ground, really.
That's going to have to be the thing for him going forward. If he's going to be a convincing heel, he can't go to the top rope and fly about the ring, because that'll pop the crowd. So the fact that he's come into this match and shown that he can work a very solid ground game against arguably the best technical wrestler in the world, it bodes very well for Owen Hart.
No, I completely agree. And there was, Brett kicked out the Tombstone at one point. I think Owen kicked out of a regular pile driver as well. They had a bit where Brett fell to the outside and injured his knee in storyline again, which, as we mentioned earlier, kind of played off the storyline that they started at the Royal Rumble. And then there was a lovely spot, I thought, during the match where Owen put the sharpshooter on Brett, and then Brett kind of flipped out of it and in a fairly smooth way kind of transitioned into his own sharpshooter, which didn't really last very long. But the finish was brilliant. I mean, again, we want to talk about kind of just how clean this match was. I think it was epitomised by the finish where Brett was sat on the top rope with kind of almost sat on Owen's shoulders, or sat on the turnbuckle as well. And he kind of flipped through for the victory roll, and Owen just, as Brett's head and shoulders landed on the mat, Owen just stood his ground and then just sat on it. It was so clean and got the three count. And again, maybe it was like, Brett's definitely going to win the title now, given that he's not going to lose cleanly twice in one night. But again, a massively unexpected win for Owen, as we're going to discuss in a minute. One, it put him on the map as a guy that he's got limitations, but if you can pull off matches like that, people are going to want to work with you, like people at the top of the card. And if you can do that, then Owen's going to be, he has a clean victory over the now WWF champion. That's a match we're going to see in the not too distant future for the title.
Yeah, I loved the finish. It coincidentally, it's the finish that we saw Brett win King of the Ring with. He beat Bam Bam Bigelow with the victory roll. So when you see him going for it, that instantly went up into my mind. It's a victory roll finish. But then I was not expecting Owen to sit down on it and get the pin. It shocked me. It shocked the entire crowd. Nobody in a million years expected Owen to go over. But Brett in that one match has put Owen over to the point where he is now instantly a credible challenger for a WWF champion.
Yeah.
In one match.
Yeah. No, can't disagree. And again, it was sat nicely as the second best match of the night, which is just testament to how good the ladder match was. But this was another excellent match, and an amazing opener. It was almost disappointing in the sense that the format, the way they had the WWF title matches, this had to be in the opener, because in reality, if they'd had a stronger WWF title match, this could have easily been more towards the middle or the top end of the show. But it was a great start to WrestleMania.
If I'm honest, I'm a little surprised that they didn't put Yoko and Lugo on earlier. I think they ended up in the middle of the card, and then there was two matches between the two WWF championship matches, which I thought was a little bit odd, because you think that...
What would you have done with it, though? Bought the other match down on the card even more?
No, I would have put it... Owen and Brett went first. So I maybe would have had the first WWF title match maybe third on the card. Just because why does Brett get an entire night to rest up for his match, whereas Yoko or Luger only got two matches? It's a little bit of... It's a bit of a strange one to me.
Yeah, maybe rather than slide that down the card, slide this up the card, take it out of the opening spot and put it right before the first title match. So at least then if you're if you're going to try and tell that story that, they both got a similar rest period, they were kind of 3 and 4 or something like that. But yeah, again, it was almost too good to be an opener. In fact, it probably was. But we should probably go back a little bit and talk about the rendition of America the Beautiful. Now, I'm not American, neither are you. And so I've never been especially enamored by the America the Beautiful thing, but being British probably doesn't help that. This I didn't think was too bad, but again, it was Little Richard miming America the Beautiful.
He was definitely miming.
Oh yeah. Oh, just a bit.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, it was just an oddity, really.
If they hadn't told me.
Cool.
If they hadn't told me it was Little Richard, I would have sworn blind it was Johnny B. Bad.
That's a good point. Maybe that's why he mimed.
Maybe that's why he mimed, exactly.
Well, that's a storyline we can come up with. Moving on to the second match of the night. Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon beating Doink and Dink. This was a cool down match because, the outcome was so good, it certainly needed it. This wasn't, for what it was meant to be, this wasn't all bad. The action was decent. The comedy was about, I think if you'd have gone a minute or two longer, it might have started to overstay its welcome, but it didn't. And the action between Doink and Bam Bam was strong enough that I thought the match wasn't all bad for what it was meant to be.
I hate the clowns. I can't stand Doink and Dink. The worst bit is, Doink the Clown as a character, when he first came into the WWF, I loved it. The evil clown thing had Matt Bourne, I think it was, portraying Doink at the time. I thought it was a fantastic gimmick. Matt Bourne was a great wrestler. Since Matt has left the WWF, Doink has obviously changed. He's gone face. Now he's got a mini-me kind of guy running around with him. I can't stand it. I think it's awful.
But does it matter that it's a different guy playing Doink? Because like you can have Bret Hart as Doink. It doesn't make sense that Doink the Clown is a great technical wrestler. It's like when Vince McMahon like constantly talks about how good a technical wrestler IRS is. It's like it doesn't make sense for the character to be a great wrestler.
Why does it not make sense?
Because the character is more about what the character is. Like the character is an evil clown or a good clown. I don't think it makes sense that you want to portray them as a great technical wrestler. Because if they're a great technical wrestler, why is he a clown? If he's a great technical wrestler, why is an IRS winning the world title rather than being a tax man?
I get your point. But I think that the evil clown was a better character than...
I largely agree on that.
Lucky Clown. I preferred Evil Doink. I liked Evil Doink.
In terms of the match, though, what do you think?
Yeah, you say it was a cool-down match. It was about as good as it could be. We had the...
It didn't need to be any more than...
No, it didn't. It did not need to be special. I mean, it was there to bring everybody down, to bring them back up again. And I'm glad that Bam Bam and Luna Vachon won. I thought the stuff after the match was a little bit odd. I mean, I think that was obviously botched when they were trying a double splash Dink, and Dink was supposed to roll out of the way, but he still got hit by Luna, who then had to carry on pushing him out of the way.
Yeah, that bit was weird, but yeah. I think it was just more those, it was largely insignificant, so yeah. It was fine. It got Bam Bam and Doink, two characters that are over with the crowd enough to the point where they should both feature on WrestleMania, into a match at WrestleMania that was probably, given that they had the comedy bit, was a bit more relevant. Yeah, I think it was fine. Then we had the first of, I think, two or three appearances from quote-unquote Bill Clinton. It wasn't Bill Clinton, but it sort of looked like Bill. I had no idea what this is about. I don't know politically enough whether we're supposed to like Bill Clinton, whether we're supposed to comedically boo Bill Clinton. I have no idea. But he was sat in the kind of like corporate executive box, and he had IRS behind him, which was quite funny. And that got IRS on the show, given that their 10-man tag got kicked. But yeah, this was all very strange. This and the segments that followed.
I just do not understand why. It's not even Bill Clinton. You've got wrestlers on the card that could use that time, but you've given it to a Bill Clinton lookalike. And I'm pretty sure they managed, if he wasn't a heel, by the end of that first bit, he was. He was shaking hands with IRS and talking about taxes being raised. I'm pretty... Oh, dear.
And the
really?
Million Dollar Man did a segment late within the night as well. I don't know. Like, what were they trying to achieve? Because was the point that we can just say with a straight face that the president was at WrestleMania? Because, like, no... Like, the media aren't going to pick up on that because they know it's clearly not him. Was the point just to try and fool, like, large portions of the audience and perhaps, I don't know, a few gullible people at home that it... That...
I would love to know if there was anybody in the audience that actually thought it was Bill Clinton.
If you had a bad enough view of the Jumbotron... I mean, to be fair, it was a good lookalike.
He was decent.
Yeah, he put the voice on. Wasn't bad. I'll give him a 6 for the voice and probably a 7 for how he looked. It was as Bill Clinton lookalikes go, it was very good. It was the Bret and Owen Hart version of Bill Clinton lookalikes. It was that kind of level. But I don't... What was this trying to achieve? I've no idea.
All it did was take time away from people that could have used it in the ring.
Yes, yes. Ironically enough, including IRS, who was in a segment with Bill Clinton, but his 10-man tag match did get cut from the show.
Oh, yes, it did. Let's
also speak about, they had these WrestleMania moment clips running throughout the show. And, okay, show's kind of just shy of 3 hours. And to be fair, we speak about the Bill Clinton segments. There wasn't a ton of non-wrestling segments on this show. There was a bit of stalling where celebrities were around, but I think that's kind of par for the course. They had these kind of like 9 WrestleMania kind of moments, one from each year. These weren't very good. Like, there was one, I think, from WrestleMania 8, which was literally WrestleMania 8, where people watched The Undertaker, and they had a quick shot of The Undertaker walking to the ring, and then they cut away back to the WrestleMania 10.
Yeah.
And then there was the bit which you pointed out while we were covering the show, which was Hulk Hogan getting just enraged from WrestleMania 9.
All they showed at WrestleMania 9 was Brett getting salt in the eyes from Fuji, and that was it.
It was togas, outside, warmth.
They didn't even show Yokozuna winning the title.
No. they implied it, but that was it.
Yeah.
They
weren't very good. To showcase the WrestleManias that came before, they didn't do a very good job of showcasing them.
No, each segment was far too short, and in every occasion, it was like, what was the point? What did you showcase? It almost felt like you were just like, particularly with like WrestleMania 9, where there wasn't necessarily like much to showcase, certainly where you can't use Hogan anymore, you won't. But what were you showcasing? It almost felt like you were hiding something.
Each one of those segments could have quite literally been some people turned up to an arena and watched some wrestling, and then there were some matches. And
I'm
then
pretty sure
back to
the walls.
Well, that was WrestleMania 8.
Yeah.
Some people turned up to an arena and saw The Undertaker. Now back to the arena.
Yes, exactly that. I don't know. Like, it was, the idea made sense in that we're trying to build that, you know, there's been 9 WrestleManias before. This is number 10. Let's showcase some important moments. But each video clip was about 30 seconds too short. And was just insane. They got annoying towards the end. It was like, what are they there for? But we can file that under the bad, next to Bill Clinton, under the bad things of this show. Another thing that I think I could file into bad thing of this show was Randy Savage against Crush. Falls Count Anywhere match. Incredibly convoluted rules. It kind of takes me back to last year when we had Halloween Havoc? Yeah, I think it was. So it was the Texas Death Match in Halloween Havoc between Vader and Cactus Jack, where they had the kind of like pin a guy anywhere in the arena, then he gets a 30-second rest period, and then he's got to answer a 10 count. This was pin a guy anywhere outside of the ring, and this got really convoluted at one point during the match, and then the guy has got 60 seconds to make his way back to the ring. So we start off, and really nice in terms of this has been probably the most intense, I think you'd probably say to a degree, the most intense feud of any of the matches on this card. With respect to Brett,
it's probably the longest build, along with Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, and this has been building for, what, better part of 5-6 months, something
like
that?
You could, it all, they, the way they storylined it is that it stemmed from Crush injuring himself when he was trying to slam Yokozuna on the Intrepid. That's where it came from. He was apparently convinced by Randy Savage that he could slam Yokozuna, and in trying to do so, he got himself injured.
Yeah,
you can go back to before SummerSlam in 1993.
And then when did Crush get written off? That was the summer, was it, when Crush got like the 4 banzai drops when he was still a babyface? That was midsummer, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
And then
he came back with Fuji as his manager.
As the heel. Turn on Savage. So that was, God, my dates are awful, but that was kind of, I think, September, October, something like that. It was a big angle around then. So this was, to come back to where we were, this was kind of almost like the big kind of intense, not blood feud, but close. And so like, Savage comes out first, and then Crush comes out, barely gets out of the kind of our way part, and Running Savage just runs up and attacks him. So really intense start. Crush earns the first pinfall fairly early on by just dropping Savage onto the guardrail. So Savage has 60 seconds to get back into the ring. As Dave Meltzer quite rightly pointed out, Savage took about 85 seconds to get back into the ring. So, you know, let's just hope nobody else was timing it of any note.
And it's okay, because we had the Fink counting it down.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was fine. And so, yeah, basically, you've got to pin someone at any point, and then you can... Then they've got 60 seconds to get back to the ring. So the action gets into the ring. Savage hits the top rope elbow drop to Crush in the ring, but because the stipulation dictates that he's got to start outside the ring, Savage has to roll Crush out to the outside, pins him on the outside, and then Crush... My favourite moment of the match was when Mr. Fuji went over and grabbed, a big jug of water or something like that. It didn't, pour a bit on Crush. It just took a big jug of water and just dumped it over Crush to, revive him. Then Crush crawled back into the ring. And so then we get... They kind of go back into the outside. They climb over the guardrail, this time into the fans. Crush hits a super kick and then goes for a pile driver. Savage counters the pile driver into a back body drop. And then they kind of brawl out through the crowd back into the backstage area. I'm not sure quite where they end up. They end up on what seems like a bit of TV scaffolding, that kind of thing, where it's the sort of thing where if you're going to rig up a camera on an elevation, you'd have this kind of platform. And then there's a cable dangling down. So Savage ties up Crush's legs and kind of pulls the cable up. So Crush is all of a sudden hanging, with his head right next to the concrete, his legs up in the air. So Savage runs off because I think he did pin him before that happened.
Yeah, I think he rammed his head into a door.
Yes. So Savage runs off towards the ring. Savage climbs back in the ring. The rest counting away. Crush falls down because Savage has done such a good job hanging him up. And then Crush just can't get back to the ring in time and Savage won the match. We spent a long time discussing this match. I was incredibly disappointed in the sense that I thought this could have been kind of not quite Brett and Owen, but this could have been a really good match between two guys who can go. A feud that I think the crowd wanted to be invested in. It was too short. The stipulation was far too convoluted, and the stipulation took away from the match to a serious degree. At least when we're talking about Halloween Havoc with Vader and Cactus Jack, the stipulation was convoluted, but given that it was a no DQ match, they had a great brawl. This was a match that I think the only thing the stipulation did was take away from the match, because none of the stuff outside really enhanced the match in any way. It was about, a minute and a half, 2 minutes in the ring? Can't be disappointed on this one, Colin.
Yeah, it's... Again, as I said earlier, it's one of the longest builds into WrestleMania. They build it as a Falls Count Anywhere match. Anywhere meaning anywhere but the ring.
So it's not Falls Count Anywhere?
It's not Falls. Well, no, it can't be, can it? You can't...
Falls Count in most places.
Falls Count in most places match, we'll call it that.
All right.
There are no disqualifications.
No, they're not falls. Because a fall ends a match.
Well, they do class it as falls, not full. Well, fall counts anywhere.
Well, true. I am being pedantic.
But, it was a no disqualification. So there was a couple of points that really annoyed me. Crush trying to hide the fact that he had salt from the referee. What's he going to do? Disqualify him? No. Right at the start, when Savage was pinned really early on, Fuji hit him with the flagpole.
Yeah.
Again, behind the referee's back, trying to hide it. Why? It's no disqualification. Just, if you're going to hit the guy, hit him.
Well, we're on the subject of the stipulations, because we have done the Razor and Shawn Michaels match. I did love that in the introduction to the match, I don't think whether it was an announcer or the guy introducing the match, but they said, the following match has no rules. To win the match, you have to climb the ladder and grab the belts. That is a rule. that is a rule. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, but that was that. Okay, this could have been so much more. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the thinking was.
We know. We know that Savage can go. And Crush can also pull off a very good match. I just don't understand. They've given them just under 10 minutes. In the whole 60-second thing to get back to the ring was ridiculous.
Oh, God. The third time I referenced the Halloween Havoc match, it's the Halloween Havoc match was, as the stipulation affected that match as much as this one did. The difference being, the Halloween Havoc match between Vader and Cactus Jack was an absolute classic. that was affected by the stipulation. This was a very bad match affected by the stipulation. But the match was a very bad match because the stipulation acted on it so much that it limited them really badly. And this could have been so much more. This was easily my biggest disappointment of the night.
Yes, it was my biggest disappointment of the night.
We had another segment with President Clinton, which we've covered. A London Blaze pinned Leilani Kai. 3 minutes. Colin, action wasn't bad. No crowd heat at all. Like, and this isn't to blame the two women involved. The match was fine for what it was. But because they barely featured or mentioned these two people on TV, really at all, nobody cared.
No, nobody gave a damn. Let's say, for a women's match, it was, solid. Alundra Blaze, as expected, goes over. The only bit I took from this, two things I took from this match.
One was how scary Leilani Kai looked.
Leilani Kai looked absolutely terrifying. One of the scariest looking women I've ever seen in my life, and I would not like to meet her in a dark alley.
Nope.
The other thing, this is just me noticing silly things. In the entire show, from what I can remember, there were three pyros. One was at the start.
A really pathetic pyro at the start.
Yep.
They cut to the wide angle shot of the entire arena full of people. And then
five fireworks.
Yeah, that was it.
And then you had the pyro at the end of the show, I believe, with Brett, after he won the title.
Yeah.
The only other time was Alundra Blaze's entrance.
And by far the most, by far the most impressive.
Yeah, the flamey type pyro thing behind her and to the side of her, visually, the best fireworks of the night.
Yep. And that was the only noteworthy thing of this match. Again, not that it was a very good match, but you can't really blame the two women involved. It was a short match. Crowd went into it. Commentators, like Jerry Lawler, basically just kept referencing how ugly Alundra Blaze was, and odd given that she's not, but I guess like Lawler was here, but my takeaway line from that was she's got a $1 million body with a 10-cent face.
Yeah, that was my favourite line. I laughed. I love it.
Of that Lawler on commentary, he was fine.
Yeah, I like it. It's quite,
but better
quite a good
than better than the $1 million man at the Royal Rumble.
Yes. Much better, and better than some of the guest commentators they had on Raw.
Oh, just a bit. Yeah, it is good to have Lawler back, because as we covered last month's show, Lawler's legal stuff has been sorted, and I believe this is his first appearance back since all that stuff happened. So, first appearance back, really, since before Survivor Series. But yeah, Lawler was good. I don't think he's not as good as Heenan, but that's not a surprise, but he is adequate heel color commentator. My main problem with the commentary tonight, we'll cover it now while we're doing it, Vince just isn't good enough commentator. He doesn't know enough of the moves. I don't think he's focused enough, and I think at times, like in the Bret and Owen match, if I had someone who was a bit more into it, a bit more traditional, it might have added to the match even more.
The bit that annoyed me the most about the commentary is that next to Vince and King was the table for WWF Radio that had Gorilla Monsoon. I love Gorilla Monsoon. I think a Gorilla Monsoon with Jerry Lawler commentary team could have been very interesting.
Yeah, I just want someone who knows the moves.
Yeah,
it's just like, what a maneuver, well fine, but fine, great, but like, once you said it like 20 times, it's like, what are you doing? Anyway, moving on. Men on a Mission defeated the Quebecers by count out. I said before the start of this match, Colin, but I was a bit disappointed that given the level of tag team action we've had in the WWF this year, or the last 12 months with the Steiners, with the Heavenly Bodies, guys like that, I was a bit disappointed that this was the tag match they'd gone with, and God knows what's even happened to the Steiners. When the Heavenly Bodies were on the pre-show, for what that's worth, or the dark match even, rather than pre-show, didn't it? But this match was probably, well, I say surprise of the night, definitely not in the sense that the ladder match was good, but my expectations for this match were really low. And not that it was a great match, but it was pretty good. And I kind of got to the end of the match and thought, I think you should have just gone with Man on the Mission there. I think the match they built, the logical conclusion, particularly when Mabel kicked out of the double superplex, the logical conclusion for me was Man on the Mission winning the titles, and they didn't.
Yeah, I think that's about as good a tag team match as you'll be able to get out of Men on a Mission. I just, with them celebrating in the ring afterwards with the tag titles, they should have been celebrating as the tag team champions. It wouldn't have hurt the Quebecers to lose the titles. You don't even, I mean, you've seen in the past, as they did with Marty Jannetty and the 1-2-3 Kid, you don't have to keep the titles on Men in a Mission for long if you don't want to. But it was a shame. It could have been, I think you termed it yesterday, I think it could have been Men on a Mission's moment. But they didn't get it.
No, but again, it exceeded my expectations, and that is a good thing. Another WrestleMania moment. We had the first in-ring introductions done by a celebrity, which I thought took away from this match. Donnie Wahlberg did the introduction for the first WWF title match. Announced Mr. Perfect as a special guest referee, who came out not just wearing referee-style shirt, but referee-style trousers. And my main takeaway with that was, what, did he do time since he last appeared on the show? Looked like a prisoner.
That's effort, isn't it? He's gone to the effort there.
Oh, yeah.
They've given him a shirt, and he's gone, no, that's not enough. I need the stripes on my legs as well.
Something like that. Oh. Anyway, Yokozuna defeated Lex Luger by disqualification. As I said when we covered SummerSlam, the first podcast we did, I wonder if you do Luger and Yokozuna again, whether you could... That was probably as good a match as you'll get out of those two. Now, this was shorter, and it had the screwy finish, although, to be fair, the count-out finish at SummerSlam wasn't exactly clean, or decisive anyway. This wasn't very good. It felt like a 25-minute match, not that these two should have a 25-minute match, but like a 25-minute match cut short at 14 minutes without any missing, all of the build-up to the end, barring the body slam.
It's a 25-minute match cut short to 15 minutes, but they still kept all the rest holds.
Oh, yeah. Look, we got 10 minutes into the match, and then Yokozuna was still applying the nerve hold on Luger's shoulder, which he worked on most of the match. As I kind of said at SummerSlam, we got about as good a match out of Yokozuna and Lex Luger as we were going to get at SummerSlam. And this was a few pegs worse. Not that it got the same opportunity. The match ended with Luger, I think, hit the body slam and then hit the kind of the baby face, let's nail him with my metal elbow move, which I still think is a bit weird.
Yeah, it's all right now as a face, don't worry.
Yeah, and then so Fuji and Jim Cornette climbed up onto the apron. Jim Cornette looked spectacular during the show.
Those gold sequin trousers, what was that about?
It was a black leather jacket with gold bow tie and shoulders, and then gold sequin trousers. Amazing look. And so they both climb up on the apron. Luger, I don't understand. If they're going to climb the apron, okay, it's wrestling to a degree, but I don't understand. When someone climbs on the apron, just ignore them. don't go and attack them. Okay, it's a wrestling staple in terms of you've got the heel with the manager climbs onto the apron, the babyface goes to hit them or distract them, and then the heel wrestler in the ring can take advantage. Fair enough. But Luger throws both men into the ring, and I think Mr. Fuji's a bit too old to be taking bumps of that kind, but that's neither here nor there.
Fuji looked like he was struggling to get up steel steps, so he shouldn't be taking any bumps of any kind.
That's true. And then, so those two are both laid in the ring. Luger goes to pin Yokozuna. Mr. Perfect just doesn't count. Goes to pin him again. Mr. Perfect still doesn't count. Luger, squares up to Mr. Perfect and goes, what are you doing? He kind of, pushes his finger into his chest and says, what are you doing? And Mr. Perfect rings for the bell. And, the crowd hated this. I hated this.
It was an awful finish.
Oh, yeah.
The whole bit where Perfect was trying to get the managers out of the ring. Luger, rightfully so, gets annoyed that he's not counting. Gives him a little push. And then Mr. Perfect gives Lex Luger the "you pissed on my cereal" look and disqualifies him. And it was a very weak finish to a weak match.
I think the crowd shouted bullshit. I was shouting bullshit. I suspect a lot of other people watching the TV were doing the same thing. Again, in terms of the story they were trying to tell, and we're going to cover kind of where Lex Luger goes from here and Yokozuna kind of in a bit. In terms of the story they were trying to tell, Lex Luger, it's clear, we're not going to give the title to. Fine. Let's give him a program to move into now that he's not fighting for the title. Fine. Although to a degree, if I'm Luger, I'm still saying, well, I want my championship match back. But I guess we might get that shortly. In terms of the mechanics of where they were trying to go to into like phase into a Luger and Perfect feud, it makes total sense. But it still doesn't change the fact it was crap. Yeah. And that was annoying because, yeah, it was like I went into the show thinking maybe they're just going to go with Luger. Maybe it's not too late. And I'm kind of disappointed they didn't in the sense that I kind of feel for Luger in that maybe he failed, and we'll talk about this in a minute. Maybe he failed as Hogan Light, but you never gave him the chance to succeed. Assuming they don't. And I, like, part of me, maybe it's his fault for not getting over to the grid that he should, but you never gave him that opportunity, I don't think, given that he really should have won the title back at SummerSlam. I don't want to dwell on that too long, but respond on that quickly if you'd like.
I think that if Lex Luger was ever going to get the WWF title, it should have been at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
This match was never going to be any better than the match they had at SummerSlam. And I think, we'll talk about it later, but I think that is Lex Luger done in the title picture.
Yep. Let's have a look. Earthquake pinned Adam Bomb, 35 seconds. High Whipple came out. Howard Finkel had a new hairpiece. Funny for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Harvey Whippleman basically ran out. Harvey Whippleman kind of ran down Hal Finkel's new haircut. Finkel then shoved Whippleman, so Adam Bomb ran out to help. And then Earthquake ran out as the babyface to make the save. The match began, and then he just... Earthquake sat on Adam Bomb, and the match ended.
What can you say about it, really?
No comment.
35 seconds.
It was fine.
Yeah, for what it was. I thought, what was the point of putting that on the card for 35 seconds? But then a little bit of research back, that's actually the fifth quickest match in WrestleMania history at 35 seconds.
Can you name the other four? Put you on
yes.
the spot.
Oh, yes, I can.
Oh, God.
The fastest match in WrestleMania history is currently the Hart Foundation versus the Bolsheviks at WrestleMania 6, which lasted 19 seconds. Then you had Bundy and SD Jones at WrestleMania 1, 21 seconds. Technically, Hogan versus Yokozuna, which was 22 seconds, bell to bell. Then you had the Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan at WrestleMania 5, which was 31 seconds.
Oh, there's that.
There you go.
Well remembered, unless you've got it written down.
Of course I've got it written down.
Oh, okay, alright. Well researched.
Why would you remember those squash matches?
Well, that's very true. Moving on to a backstage segment between, with Jim Cornette, Mr. Fuji, and Yokozuna previewing their title match with Bret Hart. The specifics of what Jim Cornette said, I don't remember because he talks so quickly.
Yes, he does.
But basically, imagine a great promo that set up the main event that's had no build. This is exactly what this was. Cornette's just unbelievable in this role.
He has got such a gift of the gab, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, again, I don't remember what he said. Like,
no, I don't.
Which is probably testament given that I can tell you it was a great promo and yet I can't remember a thing he said. Which is probably a testament to how good it was, and that he got out probably 10 minutes of the promos in about 90 seconds. Nailed it. A match that's had no build, I was really excited for now.
That and the incredible close-up on Yokozuna's face.
Oh, yes.
Completely filled the screen. There wasn't even a chin in shot.
If Yokozuna never wins the WWF title again, and I suspect he's done now, his facial expressions are the things we should remember from his title reigns. Because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you'll never top his facial expression. I think it was on an episode of Superstars where he just looked scared when The Undertaker was,
When you're not supposed to mention the casket. Yeah?
That's right. Yeah. And yeah. Don't mention the C word. And the C word was mentioned, the casket word, not the other C word. The C word was mentioned. And his face just went like, the best thing I can describe it is a blubbering baby. It's the best way I can describe his facial expression. Fantastic. And like, Yokozuna was great. Cornette was fantastic. We had the ladder match, which we covered at the start. I don't think we missed anything from that, so we'll jump. I believe straight to the main event, we had another President Clinton saying with Ted DiBiase. Yeah. The main event, Bret Hart pinned Yokozuna clean to win the WWF title. This was fine for what it was. Again, it kind of comes back to the whole thing where I get the sense Brett was quite tired. I get the sense Yokozuna's probably quite tired given that they both wrestled earlier in the show. Yokozuna, I imagine with more preparation, more time, Brett can get a better match out of him, but this wasn't the case. It was a flat match, but we got to the right conclusion. Yokozuna slipped off the turnbuckle, and then Brett pinned him. They told the story that Yokozuna hit his head and so he was presumably knocked out. Difficult for Brett to pin Yokozuna with a move that you would feel would win it, but was this a weak way to start Bret Hart's title reign?
How else would Bret Hart beat Yokozuna?
I'm struggling to recall WrestleMania 9. Could Bret lock in the sharpshooter with Yokozuna?
He got in a very loose-looking sharpshooter. He did get a sharpshooter on. You could look at it and go, yeah, that was a sharpshooter. It looked like he had two drumsticks tied up. It was definitely on, and Yokozuna was selling it before Bret got the salt to the eyes. But other than that, I wouldn't have said it looked believable. So how do you get 230-pound Bret Hart to beat the 570-pound Yokozuna?
Well, I mean, they got close a couple of times, and Yokozuna kicked out extraordinarily late of a couple of minutes. There was the Bulldog, which, like, he barely kicked out of. And then there was
I don't think Yoko was helped by Piper's counts.
Oh God, these were quick. These are really quick. Not quick in the sense that Piper was being like overly heel, overly face. It was just Piper counting at a very quick lick.
Yeah.
And then he kicked out of the elbow again quite late, but late enough. As you say, it wasn't, I didn't come away thinking that this wasn't a finish akin to Luger winning at SummerSlam, with a count out, although Bret Hart did win the title here, so it's similar circumstances. It wasn't a case of, I wasn't shocked or alarmed by the finish. It was just that this was clearly set up, and given that they've got Owen with a clean win over the champion, I can't imagine we're going to have Bret and Yokozuna much more into the future. It was clearly set up for Bret to win clean. Why not have him win in a more decisive manner with, I don't know, a top rope elbow drop or a big kick or even a version of the sharpshooter? I'm not really sure, but it kind of felt like Bret Hart's title win was, let's have Yokozuna accidentally fall on his head. And I wonder how that came across in the ring, because they sold it on commentary pretty quickly that Yokozuna landed on his head, storyline-wise, to the point where he was knocked out or to the point where he couldn't kick out. I wonder how that came across in the arena, because it was a sort of anticlimactic, I think, to the crowd.
To be honest with you, at first, I wondered if Piper had shook the rope. Because he was very close to the rope at one point. And after the match, Yokozuna chased him off. So I wondered if Piper had done it, but they didn't. The commentators made no mention of it. No. And they showed the replay of him falling off, and Piper didn't. But that still doesn't answer the question why Yokozuna fell off the rope. He has never fallen off the rope. Why now?
I guess
they needed Bret Hart to go over.
Well, true. Well, true. I guess we'll have to see how they follow up on it with TV that follows, because they might say that, you know, he wrestled twice and true for Yokozuna, very long matches. He was tired. His head was all over the place. Cardio wise, obviously, he doesn't have it. I guess that makes sense. But yeah, I'll wrap up the show and then we'll do our kind of show closing thoughts. But I guess it was fine. It wasn't any better, but we got to the conclusion we should have got to. And given the match that came immediately before it, the ladder match that, just to contextualize, the ladder match came directly before the main event. I know we addressed it at the top, but I think it deserved top billing. It probably didn't need to be any better, but yeah, it was okay. I think if the finish had been stronger, I would have had no qualms with it, because the match was fine.
The match was fine, but the crowd were more into it than they were Yoko and Luger.
That's true.
which is pretty much the best they could have hoped for. But it proved again how much more popular Bret Hart is compared to Lex Luger.
That's very true. And then the end of the show was interesting for three reasons. Number one, Lex Luger came out as the first guy to came out, and I thought, oh, okay, is Luger going to kind of confront Hart here and say, you've won your title, but I deserve my match, I'm coming for you. He didn't. He just shook Hart's hand and was the first of many babyfaces to come out and congratulate Hart. I think Tatanka was out there. Savage came out. Razor Ramon came out, which I thought was very strange. And I know he's a face, but, like, sell the match you were in. Not that Ramon came out and was, like, doing star jumps or anything like that. He was selling kind of the effects of the match. But sell the match by not being out there.
Yeah, he didn't have to be.
And then the closing scene was Owen Hart stood in the archway, effectively kind of, not in as many words, saying, I've beaten you, you're the champion, I want my shot. Which I thought was a very strong way to close the show.
You had the faces inviting him into the ring to come and celebrate. And I mean, very much giving the look of, that should be me.
Yeah.
Just getting over the jealous brother thing. It's a very, I think it's a very clever way to close the night out. It definitely sets up Bret and Owen for a program beyond WrestleMania.
Completely, completely. Colin, your overall brief final recap and your score rating for the show.
Overall, it was some very good matches coupled with some okay matches and a couple of that wasn't really WrestleMania worthy. I would give it, mainly, I did enjoy it. I would give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay,
Just for the Bret Owen, Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels match. That takes it to a, I can't take it any lower just because of those matches.
No, your assessment I'm largely fine with. As I have been before, as I was with when we reviewed Starrcade in December, I kind of think that the insignificant stuff can be put in insignificant if the matches that need to deliver. And so I gave the show a 9 out of 10 because the ladder match was spectacular. The opener was one peg below that. Just that. Like, comfortably below it, but just below it.
Yeah.
But 9 out of 10, and the only real knocks, again, like, you can't have a 3-hour wrestling show with great match, great match, great match, great match.
No, you can't.
Important segment.
You burn the crowd out.
Exactly.
Can't.
So to a degree, this show was almost faultless. My two qualms with it, one was that Randy Savage and Crush should have been far more than it was. And I know I just said you can't have great match, great match, great match. There was definitely room for a third very good match on the show.
Yes.
And two, I thought the two WWF title matches I thought were underwhelming. Finishes were both a bit questionable. But we got probably where we needed to get to. So, you know, again, it wasn't perfect, but it was only a peg or two off. And that's why I think 9 out of 10. The ladder match was fantastic. It's
groundbreaking.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's kind of have, Colin, let's have a look at kind of forward now with a lot of the names we've just spoken about. I've got six names down here to look at. Bret Hart, Yokozuna, Lex Luger, Owen Hart, Razor Ramon, and Shawn Michaels. We'll start as Bret, leaving the show as the title holder. I think, you know, because I said before the show that I kind of thought that this was going to be Luger's night, and again, as I said kind of earlier in the show, Luger is going to be looked back on, assuming he doesn't get back to the top, as a guy who didn't get over to the point that his degree warranted, but I don't think he ever got the chance. Hart, though, and as we saw with the crowd reaction, I think it's safe to say that Hart is more popular. It's not to say that Luger's not popular. Luger, I think, is still an asset to them, but Hart, I think, is tangibly more popular, especially given that Hart's Canadian and in front of an American audience, and Luger is Mr. America. Hart as champion, it's the logical move, I think. Long story short, Colin, would you say?
By far and away the most popular wrestler on their roster.
Oh, I don't know. Undertaker? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Well, that's a fair shout.
I'm not saying Undertaker's more popular, but the Undertaker definitely disputes the by far away.
Yeah, That's all right. Yeah, that's a fair shout. I'd forgotten about the Undertaker. He's away at the minute anyway, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, you can't argue with probably the most technically sound wrestler they have on the roster. So a man that is able to put on very good matches with most people that he could be put in the ring with. I think Bret Hart is the smart choice. I've made no... I've not made it unclear that I'm a fan of Lex Luger. I'm not a fan of Lex Luger. I wasn't a fan of his turn in the first place. I've said that in previous podcasts. I think now Lex Luger is done as far as WWF title goes. I actually would be very surprised personally if he gets near the main event again.
I will say that with a caveat that he might have one more title match left in him, in the sense that he got screwed again, this time by Mr. Perfect, rather than just his own lack of foresight and knocking Yokozuna out of the ring. He still hasn't been given that opportunity to have that decisive title match. He might get it, but I agree in the sense that I think his window as a main event title player is over.
Do you think there's any money in a Bret Hart Luger match?
It's funny. When looking at the permutations for kind of this kind of triangle in terms of what was happening at WrestleMania, I kind of assumed that Luger would at least beat Yokozuna, with the kind of thought that I think Luger's going to win the title. But then I kind of thought, well, have you got the problem that we're trying to get Luger over as this face, and we haven't done a very good job, slash he hasn't done a very good job. We get into the main event of the show, Luger against Hart, and we're going to try and make Luger our guy, and yet Hart's more popular. We saw that at the Royal Rumble. And if that had happened, judging by the crowd reactions, that would have happened here with this, with the MSG crowd. I almost wondered whether, could you have got money out of Luger turning on Bret and going back heel? In terms of, if there is a version of this program to be had, I think that's the only way to do it. Because putting Luger in there with Hart at the moment as a face is pointless, because you're just saying that Luger's not that popular. If you'd have turned Luger heel to win the title, that could have been some money. Because I think there's, Luger is clearly, you know, one of their most important guys. So it's not unfathomable that Luger will collide with Hart at some point in the future. But I think that's the only way you could have got there.
Yeah, I see. I don't. Lex Luger, when he was here, was the narcissist. He wasn't really getting much heat then either.
He'd get more heat
as long as he's got the right turn,
and as long as he had the title.
If he could have turned and got the title, yeah, there would definitely have been some heat there. You possibly could have got a decent match out of him and Bret Hart. I think if anybody could take Luger to a good match, you'd probably look at somebody like Bret Hart, or maybe even a Mr. Perfect. I mean, that's looks like somewhere they're going to go. We can't not have Luger and Perfect square off now. So I think if out of two people on the roster that could get a very good match out of Lex Luger, you'd probably look at Bret Hart or Mr. Perfect. Perfect's obviously a heel now because he's screwed over the babyface, so I would guess that's where he's going to go.
Yeah. I think, coming back to Hart, and we'll address Luger as well in a second, I think that Hart is the safe choice to a degree, but he is also the right choice. He's not the safe choice in the sense that I cannot make a compelling argument for Lex Luger. I cannot make a compelling argument for Yokozuna, even though I think largely I've enjoyed his run. Hart is the safe choice in the sense that you get the sense, had Luger clicked a bit more, he would have been the guy. But Hart, one, is the most popular guy other than Undertaker, but Undertaker's not here at the moment. And secondly, that Hart is a guy that you can build around long term and can have a good match with pretty much anybody. And I think part of the problem with Yokozuna was that, long story short, you were always fudging the match he was in the sense that he is, for his size, he is very good, but he is limited.
Yeah. I agree with you completely.
With Luger Colin, I mean, we discussed him a bit there, so let's not talk about too much longer. Is he a failure?
Long story short, yes. They brought him in from WCW. I think they had like an opening. I think he debuted actually. Was it WrestleMania 8 in a WBF segment with Bobby Heenan?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. They brought him in as this big guy there, and he's come into the Federation with the narcissist gimmick. Didn't really work. Wasn't really getting over as a heel. Then came the face turn out of nowhere. I don't think there's much more that Lex Luger could have done. He was booked that way, and I mean, he did the Lex Express kissing babies, posing with kids and families, and he did everything that he was asked to do in that sense, but he could not back it up in the ring. And when it comes to the in-ring, the fans just still didn't seem to take to him as the, you know, he's basically the new Hogan. The fans just would not accept it, and yeah, I think it's safe to say that Lex Luger is a WWF experiment as a failure.
I would love to, like, be able to go back in a time machine and give Luger the title at SummerSlam and see what happened. Because I think 90% it wouldn't have made much difference in the sense that he would have been a WWF champion, he would have been more over to a degree, but I think as a whole he still would have failed. And ultimately, they still would have been in a position now where they probably would have been looking at other options had they have kept the title in for this long. But I still think that you have to caveat everything you say about Lex Luger in that it was a complete shambles that he didn't win the title at SummerSlam. Yeah. And everything that follows on from the fact that he didn't get the job done. I know he won the match, he didn't win the title. And you can say everything you like about he didn't stick. But because he never, I don't think he appeared on Raw, I think he appeared on Raw in one segment between the Intrepid thing and SummerSlam. Yeah. And that Raw, I was really impressed. He cut a great impassioned promo in front of a really hot crowd. And to a degree, I thought these guys are ready for him. Now we got to SummerSlam and the crowd wasn't going bombastic for him. I think we said at the time that Undertaker was clearly more popular. So it's not like the signs are that they killed him by not giving him that run. But I think if he'd have been given the chance, it could have been different. And it could have been tangibly different to the point where he could have been in this title match, in a singles match, against whoever. And he could have been their number one guy going forward.
I think that he should have at least, at the very least, have been given the title at SummerSlam. And at least, as the very bare minimum, let him carry it through to Survivor Series. Rather than put him in a stupid Survivor Series match.
Well, if he won the title at SummerSlam, he probably would have got to WrestleMania, long story short, because, well...
They could have gauged it.
Yeah, they had opportunities to get it off him.
They could have taken it off of him at Survivor Series, put it back on Yokozuna, and then Yoko could still then go on to have the match at Royal Rumble with Undertaker.
Yes.
That match didn't need... Well, it didn't. That's only really started at Survivor Series. So you could have had that month of, I say month, it's not a month, is it? 3 months or whatever it is, with Lex Luger as WWF champion, get to Survivor Series, gauge if it's working. If it's not, put the title back on Yokozuna and go the way you're going to go now.
No, I'd agree. speaking of Yokozuna, in terms of looking ahead, let's look back for a start. His title reign started at King of the Ring last June, I think. So champion for 9 months-ish. On the whole, I think given his skill set, I think it's been very good. I think, one, it's given us the opportunity to hear and see Jim Cornette, and as I said earlier, just fantastic. I think Yokozuna has done his job, and we can't look too far into the future, but I can't imagine the title goes back on him in the sense that what else is there left to do with Yokozuna as champion? You've kind of got everything out of him you would. You've done every possible bad finish in the book to keep the title on him, even though every babyface you put up against him, you've clearly not been happy with Yokozuna to beat. I think given his skill set, he's done fine in the role, and I think he is still a player for them. But I think given what they've built, he might get, well, he should get a rematch, I would think. That would probably be the logical King of the Ring match, you would say. Or at least maybe a match on Raw, I guess. They did Savage against Yokozuna for the title on Raw, so that's not above them doing title matches on Raw. But yeah, I think Yokozuna, as a run as champion, for what he could have been, was about as good as it could have got.
Absolutely agree.
And I am a fan of Yokozuna.
I am a fan of Yokozuna. For what he has done, I think he's done, like you said, everything that could have been and was asked of him. He was given Jim Cornette as the mouthpiece because him and Fuji were never, you know, he's supposed to be a Japanese sumo wrestler, sorry. And Fuji doesn't really talk. So Jim Cornette coming in as the mouthpiece has been fantastic. I don't think there's anybody at the moment better on the microphone than Jim Cornette.
So oh, no. Is there anyone close?
No, not in the WWF.
If we're going to start talking about Ric Flair, that's a different
thing. That's what I was going to say. If you could go to WCW, talk about Ric Flair, but we're not in WCW, so... there is, as far as I'm concerned, this is the point, there was nothing left for Yokozuna to do. The only thing going forward is, it must be an eventual match with The Undertaker. But he doesn't need the WWF title for that now.
No, that makes perfect sense without it.
You don't need the WWF Championship with that match now. So, going forward, I wonder if Yokozuna, like you said, I think he'll get a rematch somewhere, whether it be on a Raw or maybe even King of the Ring. But I wonder if Yokozuna is now done as a WWF champion. I'm struggling to see a point where they would need him to have the WWF Championship again.
Well, again, maybe if they don't get anyone else in that position, because he is their number one heel, you would say. I guess maybe they could shunt Owen Hart into that role, but that's we'll come on to that. But they might need him again if they need to transition. Let's say, I don't know, Brett gets injured, and they need to put the title on a heel to transition it onto a baby face.
I can
imagine scenarios where they just wanted to have a, let's say Brett's leaving the company in 6 months' time. They want to get the title off him. They've got a baby face lined up, like Razor Ramon, say, but you don't want to do face against face. Have Yokozuna as a transitional champion, which he kind of was here, because he should have been transitional champion between Hogan at King of the Ring and Luger at SummerSlam. He wasn't. But he was kind of, Hogan, you know, maybe he didn't want to drop the title to Brett, I don't know. Maybe that's been reported. But Hogan, obviously, wanted to lose the title to Yokozuna, so he was kind of almost put in that position because of that reason. But yes, I think all being well and smooth running, I suspect Yokozuna could be in the title picture, but I don't think he'll win the title back, because I don't know what more you can get out of Yokozuna. I don't think he could have done any better in his role.
No, I think he's got to the point he needed to be. I don't think there is anything else left for that character champion.
Can I take a quick moment to fantasy book an idea that has just come into my head?
Yeah, go on.
How many people were in the ring at Royal Rumble when Undertaker got beaten by Yokozuna? What, a dozen?
Yeah, 10, 12 people.
Why don't we have, for the next, whenever Undertaker comes back, have Undertaker saying, I'm going to run through every single person that got in my way in that match, and then at WrestleMania, I'm going to face Yokozuna.
Right.
And just, that's your build for WrestleMania.
We're talking about WrestleMania 11?
Yes.
Right, okay.
How does that sound?
As long as they build that right, it could be perfect.
I guess maybe they're not all in the company. I can't even remember who it was. And there were a couple of matches that I think would be kind of filler.
Did they have Kabuki and Tenryu?
We'll wipe them out straight away. But, you know, like a couple of squash wins over the head shrinkers. I think Crush was in there. That could be quite a big match.
Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarrett, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could do, I don't know, like Undertaker against Crush at SummerSlam. Maybe that's a good match. That's kind of the stepping stone along the way. I mean, that's a good build, but
it could be a good physical match.
Yeah. No, and I think it's ultimately you end up with Yokozuna and Undertaker in a match that isn't for the title, but could be 1A at WrestleMania next year?
Yeah, why not?
That's, why not? There we go. There's an idea. If Vince McMahon's listening. Owen Hart. We've spoken about Owen Hart before, and I think it's a case of good in the ring, although I don't know that we anticipated he had this good a match in him. He clearly has not a claim to the title in the way that Lex Luger has a claim to the title in the sense that he got screwed out of the match, but he has a claim to the champion in the sense that I have beaten the WWF champion clean, therefore I deserve a chance at the championship. Now, whether he's going to win or not, I don't know. As has been said, and we spoke about before, and as you reference in the news, I keep your leg out from under your leg, Owen Hart is not the greatest promo.
No.
I think, long story short, he probably needs a manager, because the problem you've got is that this, in many ways, is the perfect scenario for Owen Hart. This is a feud with his brother. Now, okay, I don't get the sense he hates his brother, but it's not hard to imagine that as brothers, they had squabbles when they were younger. So Owen Hart can channel a few different periods of his life to get the energy and the excitement into those promos and into that kind of in-match segment. Mm-hmm. The question I've got, if you think Owen Hart could be a big player as a heel, can he reach those levels outside of the ring, and even the charismatic part of his in-ring work? I think the conclusion we get to is, no, he needs a manager.
Yeah.
Is that the stepping stone between him and being a main event player?
I absolutely, microphone-wise, right now, Owen Hart could not pull off being one of the top heels. He's good in short bursts, and he could be good in pre-taped interviews. But if you put him on a live microphone, you're likely to get kicked out his leg from his leg. And
yeah, you're going to get repetition.
At WrestleMania, he said, I beat you, brother, brother. He kept saying brother a lot. I mean, you could have thought he was Hulk Hogan for a little while. But if you're going to put him with a manager...
I still come back to my Jerry Lawler idea. Because you do
Jerry
that...
Jerry Lawler was a manager. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, you do that, and ultimately you can finally get the Lawler-Bret Hart match that we didn't get at Survivor Series.
This is true. If you could go the Lawler route, which is a decent idea if Lawler's not going to be wrestling too much anymore. But then the only other two managers I can think of at the moment that could talk for Owen Hart would be Johnny Polo and James E. Cornette. Are there any other managers I'm forgetting?
Harvey Whippleman.
I can't see Harvey Whippleman as a serious manager, though.
No, that's true.
You could make the argument you can't really see Johnny Polo as a serious manager either.
No, you wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, like, maybe Ted DiBiase? Maybe if he... Yeah, I think
He's not wrestling anymore, is he?
No, I think he's injured at the moment. So, I mean, if he can walk around...
I think his injuries... It's one of those... He's done injuries, isn't it?
It could be. Top of my head, I can't remember. But, yeah, maybe that could work. I just think that if Lawler's up for it, the storyline makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean,
you could transition
instant heat with Bret Hart,
and ultimately, one, you get Owen to a point where he's got a mouthpiece that can make him that credible main event heel, and eventually you get Bret Hart against Jerry Lawler, which is a match I think will sell quite a lot, given that we did get it at SummerSlam, but it was the match after the fact, given that Hart had to face heel Dork the Clown first, if I remember that correctly.
Yes,
we didn't get the payoff at Survivor Series, which admittedly was a 4-on-4 match. That's a match that should happen. I think for Owen, you need to put with a manager if you're going to contemplate him being ready. Honestly, I don't think he's got the skill set there yet. I think, look, it was a great match, unquestionably. But I think if we're going to look at it this way, we have to say that these were the perfect circumstances in terms of it was a feud that had a lot of heat because, one, it was with Bret Hart, a guy who is very popular. Two, it was a feud that people could get on board with very quickly. Brother versus brother makes total sense. And three, in the sense that Owen could channel on things in the past that could cover for the fact that maybe he's not the best promo. The question I've got is that you put him with a manager. And the other thing as well is that his in-ring style, as we spoke about earlier, he's largely quite athletic and high-flying. If he's going to be a heel, he's almost going to have to repackage himself. Now, okay, in a match with Bret there, he did brilliantly. That was a perfect match, and Owen, didn't do anything of his weaponry. If he's going to be in a position where he's got to carry a match against the babyface. Has he got the weaponry to build that heat that might not be there? Again, it's the Hart thing isn't over. My worry is that you, with a manager or even without, you can get him into a feud with Bret Hart. Once he gets out of that, assuming he's not the champion, and I can't imagine he will be.
No, not at all.
Assuming he's not the champion, can he go to a place where he can have a number two feud and carry it? And that's a question mark. It's not to say that he couldn't, but it's a question mark.
Yeah, I think performance-wise, he's very capable. Right now, he is not ready for a main event program. But that's not to say that he couldn't be in the very near future.
No. Let's move on. Razor Ramon, your thoughts?
Razor Ramon, he's a strange one. He's not the, I wouldn't say he's the greatest wrestler. But what he does very well. And they've transitioned him into a face very well. They started it when he lost to the 1-2-3 kid.
Yes.
And then you had some of the heels were making fun of him, referencing him in their promos, and then eventually it led to Razor turning face. And ever since he's gone from there, his popularity seems to have just skyrocketed. To the point where I wonder if the fan reaction has taken him higher than maybe his talent deserves. Does that make sense?
Deserves, I think, is the wrong word. Talent maybe warrants?
Warrants, that's a better word. Yeah, I like that one better. As I say, but for what he does do, he does very well. Is he somebody that you could see transitioning into a main event? Because, I mean, he did, if memory serves me right, last year, Royal Rumble?
Yes.
The main event against Brett?
Yeah.
WWF title match. I'd say that was very, very early on in his run. I don't know if a face Razor Ramon could carry off a main event feud.
I'll be honest. We've agreed in large parts of this show. I disagree with you here. I just think maybe he's not ready, but I think he's money and not a playoff, you know, the thing on the back of his trunks and things like that. I think he's got it. I think he looks the part. He looks like the shot of him atop the ladder holding both Intercontinental title belts, arms stretched. I just thought this guy's got it. Like, this guy looks the part. I think he's not a great wrestler, but for a guy his size, he's very good.
That's what I said. For what he does do very well.
But I think you could transit, like, they're both faces, but I think him and Brett would be money if one of them was heel, and presumably Razor, but I don't think you want to turn him back.
No.
I think he had a great year last year. The crowd are really into him. Okay, say it for the fifth time, the 100th time on the show. Great match with Shawn Michaels. I just think he ticks every box. And I can see him being in a money position sooner rather than later. Like, if not the number one guy, given that he's a face and so is Brett, if we're going to talk about that number two feud, and if we're going to talk about that kind of feud that Owen Hart might need to prove himself with, there's no logical way to get there at the moment, but Owen against Razor, like, maybe you don't want to put two guys like who were emerging together, but I think that could be brilliant.
That could be an interesting one. I mean, if you could feasibly put Owen Hart into a run at the Intercontinental Championship, but again, I'd still think he'd need a mouthpiece.
Yes, but we've been over that already.
Could be interesting. Owen Hart and Razor Ramon. That could be an interesting one.
I just think Ramon, as I say, he looks the part, and that might be one criticism against Owen. In the sense that he's got a good body, but he just doesn't look immensely tough, Owen. He doesn't... He wrestles tough to a degree, but he doesn't... He looks a bit pithy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
His hair flaps about a bit. He looks like a tryhard. Like a school bully who's kind of overreaching in the sense that I'm going to try and overrepresent how tough I am. And that's not a slight on Owen. You can only do so much with it looks. But if we're going to talk about Owen, maybe in the part in the ring, like, Razor is 9.5 out of 10 on the look front. Too much hair, I would say. But otherwise, I just think he ticks all the boxes for me. For me, anyway.
Well, I think Owen Hart's look is quite well attributed to a cowardly heel, actually. So I wonder that I think that could work for him.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair, that would do. And finally on our list of six guys, and I think given how long we've done on this, we might do WCW next month when Craig's back on, something similar in terms of looking ahead. Although maybe we should say that for Starrcade. Shawn Michaels, Colin. As I mentioned in the news, he's reportedly going to take some time off.
Yeah.
And I don't know, sabbatical, so I don't know how long that might be. I don't know whether he's kind of carrying an injury, although he certainly didn't show it in the match this week. I mean, just a standout performance from a guy who, as we've seen a lot of times, has got, in-ring-wise, is a specimen in every sense of the word. He, again, if we're going to talk about kind of guys like Hart who you can put as a champion and then put against four or five different types of guys, a Yokozuna, an Owen Hart, maybe a Crush, maybe a Bam Bam Bigelow, and Bret Hart can adapt his style to create a very passable to great match with any one of those four, Lex Luger as well. I think Shawn Michaels is a similar kind of box. I think he's going to be a foil for a while in the sense that Shawn might be the guy you get to make Bret look good going out the gate. But if he can have matches like 80% as good as that, he's going to be fine. He's going to be a player. I don't like, you know, he's just had a WrestleMania match that might be the best ever. The best of, you know, 10 years of WrestleMania. That might have been the best match there was. I mean, there's some contenders, don't get me wrong, and let's not have that discussion now because we're already well into the second hour of the show. But if we're going to talk about guys who can perform and guys who can entertain, he's 11 out of 10.
If Shawn Michaels can look at WrestleMania 10, Bret Hart winning the WWF Championship, I think, is a very good signal for Shawn Michaels. If you can put the title on Bret Hart, you can put the title on Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
I think going forward, if you look at the roster, heel-wise, you could argue that Shawn Michaels is the best all-round heel that they have. He is a fantastic performer in the ring. He'll bump and sell like crazy for his opponent, but he's also very good on the microphone. I think the sky is the limit. I would expect...
It almost was in this match with Razor this month as well. He was pretty close.
Yeah, quite literally. He got very close to the limit. I think the future is very bright for Shawn Michaels. Like I say, he's going to take some time off. But when he comes back, I would be very surprised if he is not at the top or very near the top of the card.
Yeah, I mean, again, to kind of round up, like we've spoken in the past about how WWF doesn't have that many overstars versus WCW, and I think we've spoken rightly so. They don't have a Ric Flair, they don't have a Hulk Hogan anymore, and Hulk Hogan might be on the other side, and that's going to tip the scales in a long direction. They don't even have a guy like Sting, who's over disproportionate to his ability. But if we look at these six puzzle pieces, and then we add in Undertaker when he comes back, that is a very exciting future, I think. In terms of, you've got a nice mix of guys. So in that list, we've got three faces and three heels. We've got Yokozuna, who, all right, is limited to a degree in certain things he can do. But given, one, he is literally and metaphorically larger than life. He's got that character that kind of, like, it's not the specimen of what we would talk about wrestling. He's not massively tall. He's not massively athletic, although he is athletic relative to his size. But he is the kind of guy I'd want to go and see. Because he is this cartoon character. he is this guy like, wow, because he can't move. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Yokozuna, for his size, is an excellent athlete. And then we've got Owen Hart, who's this excellent technician. Again, we spoke about him. He's got weaknesses, but he's a guy I think people will pay to see. Shawn Michaels, who is box office. Razor Ramon, who could be box office. Lex Luger, there's question marks there, in the same way there's question marks over Owen in football, in the same scale, different reasons. And then we've got Bret Hart, who is the top of the mountain. Add in Undertaker, there are seven guys there who you can build around going forward, and I think you'll be fine. With that kind of mix, there's some feuds there I want to see.
So I think as well as if you're taking Royal Rumble back in January, you could possibly even throw Diesel into that mix.
That's true.
I think that they're...
They haven't followed up on that at all. Like Diesel had
an odd one.
He had a great 7 minutes in the Royal Rumble.
Yes, he did.
Got eliminated, and we've barely heard about it since, which is almost bizarre, because you'd think it was almost the number two story after the tied finish from that Rumble match and that Rumble show, and they barely followed up on it. I mean, his role in WrestleMania this week was... He got involved right at the start of the match, and despite the fact, and here's the point, here's the one negative of the match. They said at the start of the show, this match has no rules, despite the fact there are rules. And then Diesel gets involved early on, and the referee ejects him.
Gets thrown him out, yeah.
There are no rules! You've just said that, but anyway, that is nitpicking, and it made sense given the story they were going to tell, so I should say that. But
if you go off Rumble, 7-foot-tall monster that can dominate anybody. He got popped from the crowd after his 7 minutes.
You
could feasibly turn the guy face, or you could have him as a monster heel. So that's another guy that they could throw in. They could even throw him at. He could be thrown in the deep end because I think they are struggling for. I mean, you've got Yoko as a monster. Shawn Michaels is going to take some time off. I think they're struggling for big heels right now.
Yeah.
So Diesel could be put right into the deep end. But he's tall enough, he'll probably stand up.
Well, that's true. That's true. In the ocean, if we'd have drowned. Yeah. Other than the Rumble thing, we've barely seen anything of Diesel. He was largely... No, we've seen a lot of him, but he's been the number two to Shawn. And... Shawn was away for a better part of 3 months between kind of SummerSlam and Survivor Series where he came back. And they never took the opportunity to showcase Diesel. He was more kind of Shawn's kind of cheerleader when they were trying to kind of say, like, should we see Shawn Michaels back in the company? All fine and good. But we've not seen Diesel tested in any way, shape or form that to suggest they necessarily think he's ready for that spot. Again, alright, there was a thing at the Rumble, but they haven't followed up on it. And I don't know whether they've called on him, whether they just thought, let's test the water and we'll see what it is. But it's almost like, if you missed the Rumble, you wouldn't know. Like, he's still a heel, he's still a bodyguard, they barely brought it up. And, have you missed the boat to tell that story? Can you go 2 months without bringing it up and then start saying, let's push Diesel, look what he did at the Rumble, despite... I guess, but I think it's a weak story now.
Yeah, I mean, to me, to get him relevant, and maybe the only way out of that is they'd have to have him and Shawn Michaels have a program. That's the only other. I can only think of that being the only way out for Diesel being the bodyguard of Shawn Michaels. Something happened, and Diesel turns on Shawn Michaels and turns. Well, he'd have to be a face then, wouldn't he? But they need heels.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they haven't followed up on it because they just don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Maybe they just thought, well, it was good, but what do we do with him? As you say, where do we fit him? And I agree, like, it's old with Diesel. It's, we'll put wait and see on him, I think, because you don't give him that rump, because I said in January, like, this is the start of something. This is the start of him becoming a relevant act. And as I say, they've not followed up on that in any way. And it's like, maybe they called on him. Maybe he did something backstage that just pissed someone off to the point where they're like, right, we're just going to keep you as a heel. You're important for the Shawn Michaels act, but that's it. But they've not followed up on it in a way that says to me that they're going to do anything about it. But that was such a significant portion of time. it's going to look really strange if you all of a sudden kind of just turn him into just some kind of mid-card big guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that will kind of cap our roundup. I'm going to do my TV reviews now. WWF wise, TV, unsurprisingly, was all about the build-up to WrestleMania. Shocker. The only real things of note, I mean, there was a segment on Raw where we had a presentation to Tatanka with a new Native American headdress. That was a segment that included Chief J. Strongbow and Chief Wahoo McDaniel. Then they had the March to WrestleMania 2-hour TV special, which wasn't particularly important, but it did include three long TV matches, i.e. long matches that you don't normally see on Raw. Lex Luger defeated Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey clean with a talk to rack. Yokozuna defeated Tatanka with the Bonsai Splash. And Crush did defeat Bret Hart, but that was thanks to Owen interfering and tipping over the small package so that Bret's shoulders were on the floor. Colin, we've gone long, but I did want to cover a bit of WCW in time for Spring Stampede next month. Hulk Hogan seems to be coming in. They've, again, to watch WCW TV this month, like, Hulk Hogan, if you didn't know any better, Hulk Hogan is a member of the WCW roster. Okay, he never wrestled, but he was mentioned in every segment. They built up to an interview of him where he said largely very little, to the point where I almost wonder, like, I don't know. Put it this way, they are going to look incredibly stupid if Hulk Hogan doesn't sign now. He hasn't signed, but all signs point to the fact he will. But the interview he gave on TV on the set of Thunder in Paradise was very bizarre. Basically, like, they built it up like this was a massive deal. And okay, having Hogan on your TV show is a big deal. But all Hogan basically said was, if I come back, I'm going to want to go straight to the top. I don't think he mentioned Ric Flair. Like, the context was that it was a reference to him, but he didn't mention Flair by name, and maybe that was by design. But Hogan into WCW, Colin, I'm going to ask Craig about this last month, so I'll come to your viewpoint on it as well. And then we also have to mention, which was a big part of the WCW TV stuff, which is the Ric Flair heel turn, and I might as well put this as part of the review now. Basically, they had a match between Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Stunning Steve Austin, effectively a number one contender match. But quite bizarre, given that Colonel Robert Parker basically said, I've got a contract that says Austin's the US champion, therefore he deserves a WCW World Heavyweight title match. They never explained why. It was weird. It was like, Robert Parker said, I've got a contract that says he deserves a title match. Fine. Good luck. So they did Austin against Ricky Steamboat in a main event Saturday night. Robert Parker got involved and DQ'd, so Steamboat won. So it's still Steamboat and Flair for the title. Flair comes out because Steamboat's being 2-on-1. Steamboat kind of fights him off and then just thinks Flair's another body. He's back turned, so he like slaps Flair in the face. And then, so we basically get to the point where it's Flair, like, Steamboat was, like, apologetic, sorry, I didn't mean to hit you, but Flair was quite angry, and they're slow-burning Flair into a heel, which makes sense. Let's address those 2 points in turn, Colin. Firstly, Flair a heel, I guess it makes a lot of sense if Hogan's coming in, and what do you think about the prospect of Hogan, assuming he does come in?
Well, the way the WCW pushed the Hogan interview, he has to have already, if not already signed the contract, he must be working on a handshake, because WCW cannot put that much into Hulk Hogan without getting a return from it.
Oh Lord, this will be an embarrassment of all embarrassments, not just wrestling, just entertainment. If Hogan, it was all right. It's only been a few shows, I guess, but it was talked about so much, and like they did an interview with Flair on Saturday night. And Flair is building to a match with Steamboat. And Flair was a face at this point, it should be said. Interview was, I don't know, a couple of minutes long. There were 5 questions on Hogan and 1 on Steamboat. That's probably the best thing I can do to illustrate how much they pushed Hogan. Hogan's not with the company yet. You're building to a pay-per-view that's headlined by Ric Flair against Ricky Steamboat. And yet in an interview with Ric Flair, 1 in 6 questions was about Ricky Steamboat and the other 5 were all to do with Hogan. He has to be signing. If not, egg on the face doesn't come close.
No. And the logical feud for Hogan would be Ric Flair. I was quite surprised that we didn't really get much Hogan Flair in WWF.
We didn't draw, did it? I mean, they tried it at house shows and it just didn't sell.
But don't get me wrong, Hogan and Flair are two huge names in wrestling. But if you don't, you could throw guys together as much as you like. If there's no build to it, people will be just like, oh, they're wrestling tonight. That'd be interesting.
Do you almost wonder whether it is, and I said this on last month's show as well, in the sense that I kind of thought, what if the WCW crowd rejects Hogan? I don't think they will. But do you wonder whether it's just a case of, we have to remember that we sit here and watch both companies as wrestling fans and as analysts, effectively. But there is a crowd that watches the WWF, and there is a crowd that watches WCW, NWA, etc. And there isn't much crossover. There are some. There are going to be some fans who will just watch as much wrestling as they can get. But if you don't have maybe TV that can get both shows, or you're just synergized to one over the other, if you're a WWF fan, Hulk Hogan is, you know, the big guy, the massive name. And Ric Flair is a guy I know to be good, probably. I've probably seen and heard of him enough, but I've never watched him. And I just wonder whether it's a case of, they are both gods in their own universe, but if you send them to somewhere else, they're smaller. And that's maybe why it didn't work. And I almost wonder whether the same problem could happen again, in terms of Hogan goes to WCW, and, alright, we know him to be good, but we have such a big attachment to Flair, it's too big a gap to make up. I wonder whether that might be the case.
Well, there could very well be. Both companies have got their die-hard fans. And you could even, if you take that argument, you could even take that back to Lex Luger coming over to WWF. Maybe the fans didn't take to him because they see him as a WCW guy. And basically, a big middle finger. We're not that impressed. So could it happen to Hogan, though? It's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not saying I agree with the opinion I've put forward. I'm just saying I've had that thought.
I'm sure that at some point, some diehard WCW fans might not like it. They might see this big WWF guy coming in, and he might get some negative reaction, but for the most part, I'd imagine it would be very positive. I mean, Hulk Hogan took wrestling to a place it had never been before. He took wrestling mainstream. And because of that, I can't imagine him not getting positive reactions. But Hogan and Flair is the logical first feud when it happens. It must be happening. WCW cannot... I could argue WCW can't be that stupid, but, you know, sometimes.
But the Shockmaster.
Shockmaster, I seem to remember them building... Didn't they tape a load of TV around one of the Road Warriors appearing and then not?
Yeah, they did the whole thing where they taped 3 months of WCW Worldwide and then somebody got injured, which is kind of part of...
That was when the Shockmaster came in, wasn't it? They brought Shockmasters instead of... It was supposed to be... Was it Road Warrior Hawk or Animal?
Oh, yeah.
And then one of them got injured, and so then the Shockmaster came about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so I'd say they're not that stupid. Sometimes things happen, but...
I don't think they're this stupid.
No, I don't think they're this stupid.
And this is monumental, this goes wrong, but yeah.
Arguably, WCW could have a massive pay-per-view on their hands for Hogan versus Flair, because essentially, it's WWF versus WCW.
Another question. To have a massive pay-per-view on their hands, are they going to indirectly have to build up the WWF? Because... You've got, regardless of how a bigger proportion of your audience knows the star of Hulk Hogan, it only works if you tell the story that this is a great. And are they going to be reluctant to tell the story of Hulk Hogan as a great wrestler because you tell the story of Hulk Hogan as a great wrestler in the WWF? I don't know.
It could be a rock and a hard place for WCW.
Yeah, because it almost feels like the only way to make this a blockbuster match, and it shouldn't be an issue, because you can tell a story in a way that doesn't elevate WWF that much, but you've got to do it to a degree, because you've got to tell the story of how Hulk Hogan was such a big star that he took a territorial company and made them nationwide. you've got to tell so many of these stories. You've got to tell, I think you've probably got to tell the Andre the Giant story as well. Maybe you haven't got long enough time to do it. Well, you should do. You've got to tell the story that makes Hulk Hogan the god. And you should be able to get around it. I just wonder whether they are going to have the foresight and what's the opposite of ego? I can't think of the word. The opposite of, whatever the opposite of ego is, they've got to have the ability to distance themselves and say, look.
Just humble themselves.
That's right. They've got to say, we have got to elevate WWF to a point to get Hogan to the point where we can make a ton of money, because it shouldn't matter.
But then doing that, you could then automatically as well say that, well, then Flair's going to go over.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't want the WWF guy coming in and then beating WCW.
That's true. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, no. I think
they could make reference to the fact that he's one of the biggest wrestlers in the world, and that the stars never aligned for him to have competed up until now into WCW.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily have to mention WWF. They could make reference to some of the greats that he's faced. They could make reference to, you know, to Andre the Giants and stuff like that. They don't have to mention the World Wrestling Federation by name.
There is a way of doing it pretty easily where you can just dodge the bullets that mean you can tell a great story.
Yeah.
They've just got to be clever enough to go, look, there's a few things we could trip on here, but this is a very logical story if we tell it right.
They could just make reference that he's main evented some of the biggest wrestling shows in the world. He's faced some of the biggest legends that have ever competed, and now he's in WCW.
Exactly that. And to finish the show, my ECW TV review, just to tick a box, even though in the grander scheme of things it's been relatively insignificant this month. Two title changes on ECW TV this month. The Public Enemy won the ECW Tag Team titles from the Tasmaniac and Kevin Sullivan when the Bruise Brothers interfered. One of the Bruise Brothers, they look the same, did a big kick, causing one of the Public Enemy to inadvertently pick up a pinball victory. But it wasn't bad news for the Tasmaniac, who pinned Sabu to win the ECW Television Championship. Had a very good match, actually. Very good. Given that very good relative to the time it got and the relative lack of build. Very nice finish at the end where Taz did a suplex that basically looked like Sabu landed straight on his head. And then after the match, Sabu just moonsaulted himself through a table, because why not? love Sabu. It's completely different, if nothing else. And that will wrap up this week's show. Boy, we've gone long this month. Well, I was going to say match of the month, but should we just say it's Razor and Sean?
Without a single, not even a second's thought.
No, and again, I don't want to be overly harsh on Bret and Owen, but it was.
Well, yeah.
It was comfortably the best match of the month.
It was just that good.
Yes. And that will do that. Colin, big thanks for joining me this month. You are on Twitter.
@C_Judders.
I don't know when you're going to be back. I mean, I'm 99% sure Craig will be back in situ next month when we review Spring Stampede, but I think you're turning into our WWF guy, which is fine, so I will throw the ball to you when WWF pay-per-views come around. If we can get you on, we will. But anyway, that's you. As for me, I'm on Twitter @BobbyBamber. Wrestling20YRS on Twitter. It was a lot of fun live tweeting last night, I must say. Back for Spring Stampede, I don't think in that long. It might be 2 or 3 weeks. I think it's middle of April. So that'd be that long. We've also got to vault the actual WrestleMania. Wrestling20years.com for all the old episodes. We're on iTunes, rate us there. I'm going to probably try and put us on some Stitcher and things like that soon. So you can get us on there wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're listening, that probably defeats the point. They'll do it. So we'll be back at the end of April, and all the TV that happens between now and the end of March will get covered, and all the news will get covered in that. So we've kind of done like 3 weeks a month, and then we're going to do 1.2 months next month. It's just WrestleMania, big show. Wanted to cover it as soon as we could. So the day after we watched the show was fine. But anyway, that'll be it. Thank you to Colin Judkins. I've been Bob Bamber. This has been the March 1994 episode of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. And until next time, goodbye.